Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much, but when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Rebag, your premier destination for luxury resale. Elevate your style with our curated collection of bags, watches, and fine jewelry. At Rebag, quality is our priority. Each piece meticulously vetted and verified by experts, ensuring your investment is nothing short of perfection. Buy and sell finds from the world's top brands, including Hermès, Chanel, and Cartier. Access expertly crafted and hard-to-find pieces that redefine luxury. Your next investment awaits at Rebag. Get 10% off your first purchase with code REBAG10. That's 10% off the luxury you deserve. Don't miss out. Head to Rebag.com and enter code REBAG10 at checkout. That's REBAG10.
Why running after something which already exists? Why running after stories which are already there? Why we try to occupy the space with new products? And it's always a question that every designer asks himself, and it's a lie to say that we don't think about that. And it's a very strong responsibility every time you design a new product.
Hi, everyone. I'm Amy Devers.
I'm Jamie Derringer, and this is Clever. And today we're talking to Noe Duchaufour-Laurence. He's a designer of furniture, interiors, product, and sculpture. Born and raised in France, he now lives in Lisbon, Portugal, where he maintains his studio and is connecting with the heritage crafts of the area.
His career was launched when he worked on the design of the now-famous restaurant Sketch in London. Since then, he's completed a dazzling portfolio of projects with illustrious clients such as Hermès, Saint Louis, Bernhardt Design, and Ligne Rosé. And he's deeply committed to making work that speaks from a place of truth. Let's hear it from Noe.
My name is Noe Duchaufour-Laurence. I'm a designer, furniture designer, and interior architect. And I'm living now in Lisbon, but I still have a studio in Paris. I'm doing this because I don't know what I could do else than this. Actually, I do that since many years, and I don't want to do anything else.
Never gave yourself any other options because it just didn't feel right, huh?
I did actually when I was younger, but that's another story.
Oh, well, that's actually right where we're going to start. So tell us all about your childhood and your home, the hometown you grew up in, what your family dynamic was like, and what kinds of things were you interested in as a child?
I'm born in south of France. My father wanted to be a sculptor, and he moved. He was a polytechnician doing this school, which is polytechnic, quite high school in France, very renowned school. And but it was during the 70s, and there were all these hippie movements in France. He had a car accident in Aveyron, which is a very nice area in south of France. Just before that, actually, he met my mother, who was doing some pancakes in the Alps, and but she was also an art teacher. So you can imagine this kind of environment that were around these two people. And he had this car accident, which was not bad, but the car was broken. And finally, he decided to buy a house there because there were a kind of community of artists and hippies and people like that just nearby. And he said, I love this place and I love this environment, so I want to stay there and I want to do sculpture. So he quit the school and been there doing some sculpture. And he bring my mother after there. Mm-hmm. And unfortunately, life has been harder than what he expected. And perhaps he knew that, but he passed away 1.5 years after having me there. And so I didn't know my father, basically. But I always had the feeling that I had to continue a story that he began. That's what I did after. So I grew up in Paris for a few years, 5 years. And then my mother met my stepfather, an English guy, fantastic man. And we moved to Brittany. which was more in the middle between France and Great Britain. And I grew up in the north of Brittany, in Finisterre North, which is a beautiful area, very wide, beautiful coast. And I grew up there during 11 years. And it was super boring because I was coming from Paris and I didn't have any friends, and I was going with my bicycle. So that was basically what I was doing all day long. It was running around along the coast, and it was beautiful. But when you're a child, you want to just to have friends and do something, go to see some things and go to look at the TV or whatever. I didn't have any TV. I didn't have all of that. So I had to create a world in my mind and in my head, basically. And that's what I did. And I think that's perhaps helped me to have some ideas, create some things. Mm-hmm. And that's what I did with everything, like with small toys, with some minerals in the garden, whatever. I was doing, always trying to invent something. I can't say I was very creative, but you have to create your own environment, because when you don't have really what you like, the things that all the kids can have, you know, in cities, basically, you don't have that in countryside, so you invent something else. Then I was super impressed by the movies actors, and I think when I was very young, I wanted to be an actor, but not an actor. I wanted to be a star, movie star, actually. I didn't want to wait to be a movie star. I thought, I want to be a movie star. That's it. So I wanted to begin with this. I did some theater at school when I was young, and I was like the first role of a theater, like a show, and it was super successful. So I was quite motivated about that. And then the girl who was managing this told me, but you know, you can't be a star like this. You have to first go step by step, and then perhaps one day, if you're lucky, if many things are going aligned, you can be a star. I said, oh, I have to do all this job, to do all this work to go there. So I finally quit out. I said, oh, no, it's too hard. I don't want that. So I was sketching and was drawing a lot at this time or so, at this period. It was when I was 12 or 13. I didn't have access to design. There were only one of my uncle in Paris who had a beautiful collection of Art Nouveau style furniture and Bugatti sculptures from, you know, they were like, the father was doing furniture actually, and two sons who were doing sculpture, and there were one or so designer. And he had some of these pieces, beautiful, beautiful ones.
This is an uncle of yours that exposed you to design as a as a profession?
He was showing these Art Nouveau and Art Deco artists, elements, which I didn't know at this time, but I discovered through him. And then I had only access to design through a catalog of sales. When you receive that to your home and you select objects on the catalog. And there were one famous one, which is called Les Trois Suisses, I think. And it was Philippe Starck who designed something for this one. And I saw the first piece of design in this catalog. And then I've been to Paris, and then I saw a Café Coste, which was one of his first projects there. Mm-hmm. And I was very impressed about the work of this guy. And I said, wow, I want to do that. And a few years later, my stepfather came with an article about another designer who was also artist and sculptor, who is Honorat. So basically, that was the two pillars of my first approach, plus my uncle environment. So I didn't know anything else than this. But I decided to do furniture design at this time when I was 13. And I've been to a special school in Brest, in Brittany, to do this. And that's how I came to Paris after, for sculpture first, because I wanted to touch the material. I wanted to understand the shapes. I wanted to also perhaps prolongate a bit the story of my father. And then I've been to the furniture at Art Decorative School, trying to do some things which are useful, but also very sculptural. And I can say that at the first time, the first things I was doing were more sculptural than useful. Actually, they were not very practical. My first table was basically a kind of trampoline, like something you can jump on it. And it was a very strange object.
Yeah, I think it's really interesting that you grew up around artists, and you learned at a fairly young age about design, and then kind of made that decision as a teenager to go ahead and pursue sculpture and furniture design. I think that a lot of the people that we've talked to on this podcast have said that they didn't really discover design until maybe they went to look at colleges and discovered that they could, you know, study industrial design or interior design, but didn't really get exposed to that. So I think you're pretty lucky at that age to have been exposed to that and got started on that path pretty early.
I've been lucky. And also, in another way, as I said, I don't know anything else than this now, not culturally, but I don't know anything to do. I don't know. It's like if it was one life, you have to do one thing, one mission, and that's it. But there are so many ways to do it, so many fields to explore, that it's a super vast and rich environment. So that's why I think I've been lucky in a way to discover that very young. It's true that it's thanks to my mother, actually, or my stepfather, or people around me, like really gave me the opportunity to do what I wanted to do. And they were like very open to this. So I've been lucky for that.
Yeah.
And also, to be honest, I wasn't good at school. So I needed a place where I felt comfortable, more comfortable, and I could do something, because I was not very bad, but not so good at school.
But I think that when you study something that you really enjoy and you're excited about, it makes it so much easier to focus and excel in that area.
Yeah, I totally agree. And I think that can come very early, and people don't have to be afraid of that.
When you were in school, did you find anything especially challenging, or did you learn anything else about yourself as a maker, a designer, an artist?
I think I worked so much when I was at school because I wasn't like a genius, or I didn't have something in the hands like, okay, you are very good and it's very easy for you after you can be. I had to work so much. And while I was working, I explored many different techniques and many different fields. But I knew that I wanted to go through the sculpture and exploring the materiality of things with my hands. That was something I was convinced about. Then I discovered things step by step, but I didn't know exactly where I was going. I had two things in my mind, sculpture and then furniture design. But then while I was doing this, I was also exploring all the fields like graphic design and more painting and things like that. So every time you explore something new, you go, oh, perhaps that's also what I want to do, or picture or whatever. So it's very open world.
Yes. But you add it all to the Petri dish, and then you grow your projects from that composite of all that influence that you've put in there.
Actually, the result of that is at the end, it's a sum of these experiences. Then you finally see that there is no one way of doing things. You have many approaches to do things. Sometimes I felt that even in my work through all these years, that I've been too much in this exploration, trying too much things, trying too much different environments also of products, like perfume design, furniture design, interior design, a bit of architecture, and many different environments of project also, like different clients, brands, some private projects, or big brands, small brands. So everything is organic in a way. And I was working like in different lands and I had to learn to walk in these lands actually every time. I couldn't come to say, okay, that's my suitcase, and I open it and I have my toolkit inside, and this is how I'm working, and that's it. If you want it, you take it. If you don't want it, you leave it. And that was a lot of designers do that actually. And it was impossible. Mm-hmm. For me, it was impossible, totally impossible, because I didn't have any tools. My tools were inside of me. It was my strong feelings, if I feel comfortable or not. But that's it. Mm-hmm. Every time it was like an exploration. I still don't have one way to do things, but I know exactly what I want to do. That's a different way.
I'm wondering, while you're in school studying sculpture and furniture design, and you're filling yourself with all of these explorations and different areas of study, you had mentioned earlier that you felt like you needed to continue the story of your father. I mean, now you're a man in school and you're continuing that story. Are you feeling in any way connected or disconnected from the memory of your father? Are you in touch with family and his history, or are you finding that you have to kind of write your own narrative that's different from his?
For a time, I thought that I was disconnected. I did my path. And then I'm coming back to some things which are really connected to the environment I grew up, finally, like the basis, like more connecting with the human, less with the industry. Mm-hmm. All of that is the new period I'm now working on. And so I feel disconnected in a way that I'm not copying and trying to mimic something existing, and hopefully, actually, I'm discovering my own way of working and my own personality inside of that. But then I really feel that everything that's the parents and your environment try to give you when you're a child, and you reject in a way for a long time, coming back after. So I feel that it's coming back now.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Hey, Clever listeners. We're getting excited for New York Design Week in May. This year will be better than ever. ICFF, North America's leading platform for contemporary design, will take place from May 19th to the 21st at the Javits Center in New York City. I'll be there, and I'm excited to let you know how Clever is collaborating with ICFF for Launchpad at Wanted, formerly known as Wanted Design Manhattan, and the Emerging Designer Showcase. Launchpad is an international platform for emerging designers that introduces new concepts and showcases prototypes of furniture, home accessories, and lighting. It is the best place for manufacturers to meet new designers, discover fresh ideas, and potential products to develop. The Best of Launchpad winners will be selected by a jury of renowned industry professionals, led by yours truly. And they will go on to be featured in another edition of the popular Emerging Designers Showcase. I'll be leading the Emerging Designers Showcase live on the Talks main stage, where the 5 Launchpad finalists will have a chance to present their projects to our esteemed panel of professionals. It's always a really good time. So mark your calendars for Sunday, May 19th at 4 p.m. Both Launchpad and the Emerging Designer Showcase are presented with media partners Clever, that's us, and Design Milk, and with support from American Standard and Lumens. Visit ICFF.com to learn more and register to attend. Those are the letters ICFF.com. Come by and say hi. I would love to see you there. Support for Clever comes from Wix Studio. Instead of reading you another, let's be honest, boring ad script, Wix Studio just sent me this wild-looking Alice in Wonderland-themed website to scroll through and tell you about. So, whoa. This is not the web I'm used to. There's something called mouse parallax, which makes it feel like you can go deeper into the screen. And as I scroll down, it's like I'm falling down the rabbit hole. And things are moving in depth and perspective. Even my cursor has morphed into a glowing little orb. There are all these no-code animations that make this place feel organic and alive. And Alice is wearing some pretty cool shoes, by the way. Okay, I know I'm mixing up my narratives now, but we are definitely not in Kansas anymore. Your turn to go down the rabbit hole. Build your next web project on Wix Studio, the platform for agencies and enterprises.
you've graduated, you've studied sculpture, furniture design, you've filled your toolkit with all of these practices and modalities, but it's your strong feelings that are ultimately your compass. And I read that Sketch, which is a Michelin-starred restaurant in London with incredibly theatrical interiors, was one of your first big projects. Is that how you got started in the professional world?
It happened because when I was in art decorative school, I fell in love with a woman. She told me, let's go to Morocco during 1 year. And I was still doing my studies. And I said, yes, that's a good idea. So I said to my teachers that I had to go to Morocco to discover the craft techniques in Morocco. And they laughed in a way, but they say, okay, go if you want. And you will come back in 1 year. And I said, so I went there. And we were living in front of the sea, in a small, tiny wooden house in front of the sea in Rabat, south of Rabat, a beach which is there. I didn't do a lot of work at this time. I was more like exploring the beauty of the beach and the beauty of the wood I could collect there and trying to make some object with it. And so basically during, let's say, 4 or 5 months, I didn't do a lot there. I was like more meditating. And but discovering Morocco in a way also, because I traveled a lot around. And then I met two persons there, and they invited me to work on a project they were doing. And one of these guys was an interior designer in France, and was doing like a lot of fancy restaurants at this time in Paris. And he saw my drawings, and he said, hey, you could do my drawings, like do some sketches and do some 3D, not 3D at this time, it was like more like renderings. Sketches. And I said, yeah, that's interesting. It was for me like a job. One day I was coming, I came back to France. Actually, I came back with a baby. So I was still a student, and I had my first child, who's Luna, who's 22 mm-hmm. years old now. And wow. She's actually now in art decorative school, the one she saw when she was a kid, because I was still going to school with when she born. So I was going with my little baby sometimes to the courses. yeah, and then I was doing this work for this guy, doing some sketches and giving him some ideas on paper. And one day he told me, I have a big, huge project with my friend Momo from Mourad Mazouz in London, and with other people. We are doing a bigger restaurant in center of London, blah, blah, blah. And it was the sketch. So he involved me, he took me to make this, doing some design for this one. And that was my first professional experience. But then after a few months, they stopped the relation because they had like a battle between the two friends. And I said, okay, Noé, I want you to come with me and to design some things for me, like for this restaurant, and do the design like independent for. So that's how I began my work, actually. And that's how I began my studio and everything. And I was alone, and I was doing and this guy was super nice, gave me the opportunity to make my project. The interior designer, who is now not doing any more interior design. I think he's like lost, but he's doing some other things. But he was super generous because he gave me the opportunity to do it.
So I want to hear about the rest of your career, because you kind of jump-started your career somewhat by accident, working on a very big and famous project. You've been pretty prolific with all the different types of design work that you've done. I'd love to hear a little bit more about some of the projects that you hold near and dear to your heart, or you felt, you know, you got the most learning from, or maybe the most recognition for. What are you most proud of?
I think I was proud of the first furniture project I did for Cecotte Collezioni, which was Manta furniture, which is a very organic and very sculptural piece. Really, like, if I was doing a sculpture, it took me 2 years to make it in a way with them, because it was a long process. And there were only 20 pieces made for this project, only 20 units. So Cecotte was really the first real strong and very intense project I was doing in furniture. In interior design, I had Sketch, but Sketch was like a battle. It was crazy. I was thinking every time when I was doing this project that I could quit the interior design world that wasn't for me, and I could go to in the mountains to do some goat cheese or whatever. I was like thinking, okay, let's do that. That's not for me. That's not my business. It's world. But hopefully I'm quite resistant and I've been to the end. But it was a very complex project because even at the end, nobody knew that I did part of it. I didn't design all of it. Huh? It changed, and and also it changed a lot since I did it in Diamandavi. A lot of artists have been involved, so it has been totally transformed. I could say that there are only the eggs and the bar, which is actually the shape I designed like 12 years ago, even more than that. Checo di Collezioni is one of my very important projects. Then I did Sandorens in Paris, which is a restaurant in Place de la Madeleine. It was a listed building made by Louis Majorelle. And I had the chance to do the design through Louis Majorelle furniture and environment. This project had been changed since, but it was very successful when I did it because the chef also quit his 3-star. And he moved to a more simple way of doing his food. And everybody was very impressed by this at this time because a chef was who had 3 stars during 20 years quitted them in one day. It was a very intense moment in France. And I designed his restaurants. And then another big project for me in interior design was Air France Lounge in Paris. That was my biggest institutional project, I would say, for a brand. Mm. And we developed a lot of things for them. And Montblanc Stores, which is one of my latest huge projects because it's 500 stores in the world. So I developed 15 stores, but I developed all the book for the architecture guy for them.
Ah.
And that was the latest project I did for him. And before that, I did also the Facebook lounge, headquarter lounge in Paris, in a building that Facebook occupied, which was a mix between sculpture and architecture. That's for the interior design, I would say, plus one private project, which is a ski house in the Alps.
Oh, that must have been fun.
Yeah, that was really interesting because the family was totally... respectful of what I was doing, very interesting people. And I think they came like 3 times at the studio to try to convince me to work for this project because I didn't want to work for private because I was afraid of working for people who can change their mind and, you know, being too much involved in their intimacy. And I was like, oh, well, that's not for me. But finally, I had a very, it was a very strong and very good experience. One also very good project was, it's a small project, but it's an apartment, part of an apartment in police building for a friend of mine in police building in New York, in Santa Street. And this famous building is super interesting as a building in New York. It's also the apartment there was, it's Annabelle Seldorf designed part of the apartment and I designed another part. And it's also because it's a very good friend of mine and a fantastic man that I was very happy to work on. Sometimes you can share a part of you, and that's what I like about this work. But I try to stop interior design now, to focus more on furniture. And speaking about furniture, I spoke about Checo di Collezioni. Then I had some other collaborations with Ligne Rosé, a very good relation in France with Michel Rosé. It's still a very strong connection with him, but the biggest relation and biggest connection I ever had with Jerry Elling from Bernard Design.
Mm-hmm.
Jerry, we met like I would say more than 10 years ago, and we had a very strong immediate connection. We were thinking that we shouldn't do any more furniture. That was the base of our relation.
So wait, you and Jerry founded your friendship on the idea of not doing any more furniture?
Exactly.
Okay, explain that to us.
Yeah, that's how it began. There was too much furniture and we shouldn't do any more. That was the
I love it.
We're still thinking about that. We're still looking at things like this. Why running after something which already exists? Why running after stories which are already there? Why we try to occupy the space with new products when there are already many products? And it's always a question that every designer asks himself. And It's a lie to say that we don't think about that. It's true that we think about it. And it's a very strong responsibility every time you design a new product.
I believe it. It's your offspring. And you don't want to add noise to a conversation unless you have something important to say and it needs to be heard. And you also don't want to put products out in the world that are just, I don't know, they sort of look cool, but they're kind of destructive. Like, that's not the kind of child you'd want to raise.
It's true.
And so when you're contributing to the creation of something new that's going to populate a landscape where a lot of things have already been said and defined and understood, yeah, it's a deep responsibility to think about, what am I adding to this that makes it better and not just more populated?
It's true. But when you think intellectually, we can say that, okay, if I analyze the life of the product, if I analyze the needs of the people, if I analyze every subject which is related to industry of design, how can I do something different and more interesting? But if you think about, like, if you mentalize everything and you think like a little bit like a computer, you put all the ingredients inside and you try to do something. But when you think with your own soul, it's totally different. And that's the hardest part, because you have to control your feelings, but you also want to share your feelings. And sometimes mm-hmm. you really have some things to say. That's, again, I told you, it's the only expression, the only transmitter that I found to give something, because that's the only thing I know to do, actually. I could have gone through sculpture. Perhaps I will go one day somehow more in the abstract world. But I still think really related to the use and the needs, in a way, even if it's not the only goal of my projects. I design less now. I can say that I design much less, even though I feel that I work two times more than before. It's always crazy. But we have so many projects, so many products to design now. But it's all our different and individual stories. And all are related to something which is really emotional. And rooted in my background, or inside of a relation I have with someone, saying, for example, if I design something with Jerry, it will be because we have a conversation and discussion and exchange at the beginning. And it's always like, let's move this direction, let's do this. And sometimes we fail. And if we fail, and if Jerry thinks it won't be, and to be honest, we have an example now, after 2 years of work together, he really think about, do we move forward or not for one product? Mm. So it's quite intense in terms of investment in yourself and your emotions, mm-hmm. and the path is quite long. Saying that, it's true that I try to be as sharp as possible, as clear as possible in what I'm doing. I did a lot of mistakes. I will do perhaps more. But I try to be as honest as possible today in what I'm doing. And that's perhaps explain what I'm doing now in Portugal.
Well, I'd like to talk a little bit about your creative process, because you talked about telling stories. And I mean, your work certainly does that. I think most design has a story of some sort, or is originated from some sort of story. But I mean, you're bringing together all of these things, like materials, design, natural forms, fine craftsmanship, heritage. How do you formulate the ideas in your brain, and how do all of those things come together? And do they come together before you even start a project, or is it more about you learn along the way as you're working it out? How does it kind of come together?
I would say that there are some things coming up with the time, and they are like in the back of your mind, and you have one or two ideas, but they are like floating somewhere. But it's questions, perhaps. Sometimes it's not even ideas. It's not like, oh, I have an idea. I really think this material is interesting, or I love the work of Henry Moore. Why do I'm so touched about his sculpture, and how can I transmit this? How could I see the essence of that in a design, or any kind of reference? Michael Eiser's work is fantastic. His work on stone and some brutality is beautiful, but also this abstraction and geometry. How can And this could be interesting perhaps in the design environment, but that's just feed yourself, like, because you are traveling, you are going in to see exhibitions, you are open to art world or not art world, like also people you're speaking with and artisans you are meeting and some simple object you are just seeing in the street or wherever along the path. We know that that's part of the creative process, all of this randomly going in your brain and just doing this big mixture of whatever it is. But at the end, it becomes creativity. If you go to the field of your emotions, like one day you want to say something and the answer were prepared in a way in the back of your brain. Because when you start to sketch, then everything is easier because you just put on the table. So you want to do a table, you want to design a table, or you want to design a chair, because you think that could be interesting to rethink about the way that this organic shape around your body could be fitted and how it could be simple, but also a little bit more soft and subtle and more sensual than the one you saw already, and how it could be more connected to the body or to your emotions.
So you've talked about you're all pulling from this emotional well that you have deep inside, and you've talked about thinking with your soul. And I'm wondering, like, do you have a strong attunement to your own, like, bodily responses? Does your body tell you when your emotions are resonating with something in the form of, like, goosebumps or a warm feeling? And are you attuned to that? And do you work with it?
Yeah, totally. And I feel this when I'm sketching, actually, or when I'm drawing. Everything is going through the drawing. The answer, when I feel that the object is good, is that when I feel something strong in my body. But it's my only personal way of judging.
Yeah. But in a way, when you pay attention to how your body's reacting, then it's a slight detachment from your analytical processing of everything. I mean, I'm the kind of person that can overthink something if I don't stop and check in with my body, but I always feel that my body is a kind of an accurate barometer to what I'm truly feeling. And like, for me, it's important not to be too analytical. I need to be both.
It's funny because it's true. Sometimes it's you think that, hey, emotions are not driving everything. Like, you have to be a little bit more focused and, I would say, analytic in your way of working, because otherwise you're just going to, like, a world of things which are basically under the name of feelings, and that's not the way that you can drive everything all your life, actually. Mm-hmm. But it's hard for me because I do a lot of this. And every time I try to do everything through only the theory or the analyzing, I just discover that it's not the right path. It's coming along the path. Emotions are related to a way of thinking and a way to analyze things. So both are combined together, and I can't dissociate them. As soon as I try to just do something intellectual, I just fail. I don't know how to do it.
Oh, okay. That makes sense.
Not your skill set.
It sounds like your process is pretty intuitive. And I'm actually interested in your sculpture background and how that plays into your creative process. Because you talked about feeling objects and then drawing. Are you using that sculptural background in your creative process? And if so, how?
I do, because I did only 2 years of sculpture at school. It was a freedom of thinking, of doing, of whatever you wanted in a way, in any scale you wanted. So this freedom really helped me to say there is no rules in a way. One of the things I really try to connect with is the freedom of creativity, which is really something which is very important for me. As soon as someone tried to take it out from me, I react very strongly. It's too much, too important for me. This freedom. And then I would say that sculpture helped me to be able to go in any kind of environment. But I would say that's, I learned more than the process after this time, because basically when I was doing sculpture, I was doing metal sculpture, most of it, and some wood, but more metal. I didn't keep anything. Don't ask me to show you anything, because I think it's messed somewhere. I have some pictures, but and it was quite aggressive and industrial and very strong, like very strange compared to what I'm doing now, much more soft. I discovered it's like if I was working only on the structure of things made of these wires and beams and structures, and then I discovered the skin above it. So I think that the design helped me to think about the skin and how things are visible from outside and not where the technique is hidden in a way. Because that's the kind of design I do, not like many other designer work, only the technique is making actually the shape. But the beauty of this moment was the fact that I discovered that you can do some mistake, you can fail, you can go up. It's never the wrong answer. There is no wrong answer. There is an answer, and then people would say if it's wrong or good.
That is freedom, right? Knowing that there's no wrong answer, that gives you carte blanche for exploration and for discovering what resonates with you. Usually, if it's coming from someplace deep within your soul, it's going to resonate with someone because it feels honest and authentic and like a gift from a human, not just like something that's there to fix a problem.
Yes, and I think we can fix problems through emotions. And we need emotions, and we need these moments of sincerity, of truth, and this is only human related. It's not the science who, at the end, okay, we can say the science will save us, but I think it's not true. The human interaction will save us, because that's the only way that things are connected together. If people don't think about the others, there is no future. So. At the end, I think this, yeah, it's important to relate to that. It's a little bit idealistic in a way, but and I feel a bit like a child sometimes to say this kind of sentence. It's like, hey, come on, man, we are 45. You could think of it differently, and you have more experience. Now you could be like a man saying, okay, I have a way of thinking, and that's it's not true. I'm still open to this kind of environment of movement of beauty of things where there are like some exploration of the human language. I still believe that there is beauty everywhere and we have to see it and we still have to discover a lot. And if I try to through what I do, give a little bit of what I feel is nice or what I feel could be interesting in terms of beauty or my way of looking at things, I don't have I don't think that's my answer will be the final one. Just a part of a process and part of an ecosystem. And that's it. That's why I think also it's interesting to say that your object at the end, when I look at my work, I say, come on, she did so many things, but what do we keep from that? And what we keep from that is that all this work is a little bit like looking like me. It's like it sometimes good, sometimes bad, sometimes a good man, sometimes a bad man, sometimes a good object, sometimes a good bad object. And I have to admit that it's true. But the thing is that every object has been made with others, with interaction, with all the people integrated in the process. And that's the beauty of our work. It's like a teamwork. It's not something coming from one person, even if it's a look. Egocentric at the beginning. Everything's going in a very phased environment after, and a lot of interaction going through this process.
I want to bring it back to that again, because in the beginning of our conversation, you talked about continuing your father's mission or life's work. Do you feel like you've done that or are doing that?
Not in the purest way he did it, actually, because I was afraid of the art world. The art world is like a vast zone where you can jump in and you can lose yourself. You have to be very sure of your ego, of what you want to say and your line, or you have to be ready to be lost. And that, I wasn't prepared for that, actually. I needed to be connected to reality. And reality is also what is around us, like what is needed. And finally, it's easier to say, I'm going to design a chair than I'm going to do a piece of art. Because a piece of art is like what? For who? For yourself, for the others. What is the truth inside of that? What do you want to say? It's huge.
Yes, it's huge.
It's huge. So no, I didn't continue his path because it was too radical. And hopefully I didn't continue it because he was also a lost soul in the world.
Yeah.
So I think it's important that I'm finally happy that I didn't go through this process. But in a way, it helped me. It was the seed for the kind of tree growing up. That's it. And it gave me really like this kind of movement that I needed at the beginning. But just the idea of the project. And again, I never met him. I met him. I was like one and a half year when he died. So I had to invent everything around him, even if people were telling me things, and they are still continuing to tell me things which are different now. I hear different stories every time. The environment of his image is still changing. I only knew that he was doing he was really intense in everything he was doing, and he was really exploring very intensely everything he was doing. The sculptures I have now, I have a few of them. He didn't do a lot because he did all this work in 2 years. The sculptures I have now are really an expression of what he was giving. It's like you feel the hand, you feel the gesture, you feel the pain.
Yeah.
And that's what I think is beautiful about the sculpture.
I want to ask you, I mean, growing up not knowing your father, but having this rich imagination and some of these inputs to understand your father and the seed that was planted, how do you think that influences your fatherhood? Because you mentioned your first daughter, Luna. How many children do you have?
4.
And do they know you better than you know your father, would you say?
I would say yes, because I'm really connected to them, even though the last one has only 5 months.
Oh, congratulations.
Yeah, thank you. No, I feel like it's strange. My father wanted to be connected to a community, and I'm creating a community of kids. No, it's really strange how life is growing up. Like, my brain is not controlling everything, and it's more my feelings. It's exactly the same for what happened in my life, my personal life, I would say. So that's how I had 4 children with 3 different mothers. And everything is quite, even though there are like big movements and sometimes big storms in this life. Mm-hmm. But at the end, the beauty of it is that like there are like a strong, very strong between the sisters and brothers. They are all connected together, even if they are not living in the same cities or even in the same country. I still think that, but I've been also educated through that. Like my stepfather was my father, actually. And he told mm-hmm. me that he will never have his own kid because he never thought that it was important. For him, the link of the blood doesn't exist. And it was stronger to love someone and whoever he is at the end. So I think it's that's how things are growing up with my kids. I'm really connected to them. They are really important for me. Yeah, I try to give them a lot of time, and we organize a lot of holidays together, time together, and connection. And it's I don't know exactly if I'm the right father, but I know that they are the right kids.
That's a beautiful thing to say. I don't think any parent can actually be the right parent, but the kids really can be the right kids.
Exactly.
I want to ask you about legacy, because kids are a part of that, but also you're making objects that will outlast you as a human being. Are you thinking at all about legacy, both personally and professionally?
Legacy is important because it's something, when you think about an object, you think that it has to stay for a long time, because otherwise mm-hmm. you just throw it away and it's just part of the garbage and it's not part of a life.
Mm-hmm.
It has to be damaged sometimes and repaired. It has to be, it has to live and to be patinated. It has to accept, to be refixed sometimes. And that's the beauty of the legacy in a way. That's at the end, it's an object which aged in the time. So when you think about that, when you design, it's changing your perception. And finally, legacy is also synonym to of longevity, and longevity to also eco-conception in a way, because you try to think of things which are going to stay for long. And that changed your way of doing. I try to avoid anything which is not resistant, which is not good in terms of all the components inside. It has to be something which is well done. And when it's well done, when you work for Hermes or Saint Louis or people like that, or with a craftsman, with artisan I'm working with now, you really know that the object will age after you and it will stay. It's a different perception. So then you think about what we are doing with your kids. I don't think that I'm really thinking about legacy for my kids when I'm designing. But if I can tell them that everything I do, I try to do it with a maximum of truth and to be as honest as possible, I think that's the good legacy I can give to my kids. The rest, I don't know what they will do with the object I'm doing. Even like, even I don't know, even if the whatever furniture is strong enough to resist for 200 years, I don't know if people will still want this one in 200 years. And I don't want to be able, I don't want to be seen as a person who think that his object will stay for 200 years, because it's not true. I don't know. Perhaps in 5 years, nobody will want any more my stuff. And that's it. It's also, legacy is also part of a transmission of techniques, of knowledge.
Heritage. Yeah, it's a vessel for heritage. Yeah.
It's true. And that's what for sure, I'm really sensible to that when I'm working with artisan, when I'm working with a maison like Hermès or Saint-Louis, or even with a company like Bernard. And it's true that there is all of this soul which I and all this knowledge which I try to understand and to reconnect with the design. So it's part of the process. I feel that when you are designing something and you have someone nearby you who knows more than you, and you are working with him or her, it's fantastic. You just learn more than what you give at the end.
Yeah.
And, so yeah, it's great. And
it's a real gift.
Yeah, it's a gift. And your object is full of this also at the end, because you have this knowledge which is integrated in your creative process. Mm. It's fantastic.
So speaking of that, do you have a new project or something, a recent project that you want our listeners to know about that they can look up to check out your work?
Very important project now I'm doing is the one I'm doing in Portugal. I moved to Portugal, so I still have my studio in Paris, where we are designing a lot of products and some exclusive products, and also furniture like the one we are doing for Ligne Rosé, Bernard, Saint-Louis, these brands. But I also thought that it was time for me to do something without clients and doing something for myself. Sorry. Perhaps joining the idea of being a little bit more an artist, or doing auto, like an entrepreneur, doing my own thing only by myself. And I'm actually exploring this country, this new country for me, through the craft. And I'm going basically around the country, finding some people doing which are not the best one in what they are doing, but they have something to say. They have really some interesting stories or interesting moments in their creative process. And I try to actually design objects or furniture with them. And it's every time connected to a context, connected to a people, connected to a technique or a material in a different area of Portugal. And I'm going to do a collection I will show in a space I will have in Lisbon. And it will be from January or February next year, depending on the timing. We are not still running after time. And I will show this every 3 months with a new collection. And that's very important for me, because it's the first time that I'm totally free. Nobody asked me to do that. It would be like a gallery, a creative lab. I'm going to invite some chef also to connect with the project we did, because the object is not the final part of it. It's just a part of the process. All the thing finally that I discovered through that is that as soon as you touch something, you explore all the world and the environment around craft, and natural material, you finally interrogate the environment and the sustainability of a project. And finally, I discovered that there are a lot of questions about environment which are coming through this process. And that's super interesting because all the things we are speaking about, there is not like always example to show it. Finally, I just saw that when you are connected to something very simple like agriculture, like things which are growing up or wood, you just speak about environment. And finally, all the questions we ask ourselves are there. So, yeah, that's what I'm. It will be a project which will launch next year.
So how can we keep track of this project? Will you be documenting the process? Will we be able to see the products? Is social media or your website the best place for people who are not in Portugal to be able to experience this?
Yeah, sure. The first thing will be, it will be presented in our gallery, but it will be also on a website dedicated to this project. Actually, this project is called Made in Situ. And there will be a link from my website to this new project, new platform, I would say. It's more like a platform, actually. And I would, yeah, on Instagram, I sometimes post some things about this exploration, even though I don't post so much now, because I think it's good to be a little bit more calm on Instagram. People are spending too much time on this. So... And yeah, that's what I'm. I think it will be the best way to look at this project will be on the website of Made in Situ, which will be launched I think, also beginning of next year. And for sure, Instagram, we will have a special account for that, and or just contact us through our website.
And will you tell us the website URL real fast?
Yeah, my website is noedichauffourlaurence.com. So it's my name with .com. And if you just write it well, which is very hard to do, you can access to it.
Well,
if
we'll include a link.
It, then you can get there.
Yes. We will definitely include a link in the show notes and the description of this episode so that people don't have to worry about the spelling.
Yeah. And it will be funny because as soon as you just pass this first step, which is writing, then you have to explore the website. And the website is like a world by itself. You can play with the image. You can move them. You can hear some sounds, see some videos. But it's like a table. You have all the things on the table and you just have to choose.
Thank you for talking to us, Noe. Real quick, before we let you go, here's another reminder to check out Finnish Design Shop for modern Scandinavian designs and inspired gift ideas for your projects, your friends, or yourself. Head to finishdesignshop.com/clever to shop their Black Friday deals. Hey, thanks for listening, everyone. To see images of Noe's work and read the show notes, click the link in the details of this episode on your podcast app or go to cleverpodcast.com where you can also sign up for our newsletter. And if you haven't already, please subscribe to Clever on Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your podcasts. And if you could do us a favor and rate and review, it really does help us.
You can also connect with us on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook, and you can find us there at Clever Podcast. Clever is created, produced, and hosted by us, Amy Devers and Jamie Derringer, also known as 2VDE Media, with editing by Rich Straffolino and music by L1011. Clever is proudly distributed by Design Milk.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. WarbyParker.com/covered.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Late bloomers tend to have more curiosity. They tend to have more resilience.
There's stories and mythology that this country has woven around Black men.
This is the cavalry, right? These are the leaders, the hometown heroes and local leaders. And we are.
It's a survival mechanism to just be like worried of police.
What if everything we've been taught is just all wrong?
What's worth more than this fear right now?
And that rising after failure is part of the glory of being a human being.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.